Welcome back to another edition of the Bills on the Border podcast. This is your host, Tom Randolph. We're well underway into the third week of March, getting ready for that March Madness fever. The tournament brackets are out. The sun is shining. The weather's warm. I'm glad to be here. And joining me again, as always, my good friend Tommy Watson. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing good. It's fantastic to be here once again.
Yeah, and again, joining us for the third time is my good friend Brody Johnson. Brody, glad to have you here.
Glad to be here. Really excited about this week.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We had a pretty fun weekend. We made our way down to Power and Light District for the Big 12
games.
Yeah, the Big 12 tournament semifinals on Friday afternoon. And then watched the Big 12 championship on Saturday. And in between that, we had a fun time down in Brookside.
Enjoying the St. Paddy's Day Parade.
Yeah, it was a good time. Great atmosphere down there. Perfect weather.
Beautiful.
Not too crowded, but you know, crowded enough that you felt like you were having a good time with a bunch of people. So I definitely had a good time, and I'm excited for St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, the official St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, the real one.
Yeah. So we'll probably just go ahead and get in our thoughts now on that Big 12 tournament, how everything went, focusing specifically on the Kansas Jayhawks. So. Jayhawks unfortunately suffered a defeat in the Big 12 tournament final against the Iowa State Cyclones. Great showing by the Jayhawks in the first half, but a totally different team was present in the second half. Jayhawks giving up 47 points in the second half to Iowa State after securing a 17-point lead. Tommy, what were your thoughts on the game?
You know, to me, it looked like the same pattern that Jayhawks have followed for most of the season. They play really well for a stretch, getting up by 17 at one point in the second half. But I think most people knew by this point in the season that it wasn't really a safe lead.
Yeah.
And we watched it slowly erode into an Iowa State victory.
I think by the time they got it down to 11 or 12, we knew we were in trouble.
I wasn't even really comfortable with the 17-point lead.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody was. And I was just – first of all, I was very impressed with that Iowa State team. I know – everyone knows they can score. But to score 47 points and a half against Kansas, who has – one of the better defenses in the country in terms of, well, not better, but they play a middle-of-the-road defense for a national ranking, but they play pretty good defense in one of the best conferences in the country. Conference is known for their defense. They get up 47 points in the second half. George Niang played an outstanding game. I thought he was the MVP of that matchup. And then Nader for Iowa State ended up having a really good game, and so did Naz Long. It seemed like anybody could score at any point. It was starting to get frustrating almost watching how
diverse the scoring was.
Yeah, how they were able to do it with so many different guys. And I feel like that's something the Jayhawks are missing. They don't really have a go-to scorer. Occasionally Frank Mason will turn it on. Occasionally Wayne Selden will turn it on. Occasionally you'll see those 27, 28-point outings by Perry Ellis. But we don't really spread the wealth around as much as I'd like. They have a nucleus of 6-7 guys that can really score the ball, they can play good defense. And what I love about that team is they don't really play in a set offense as much as it's just screen the ball, ball handler, get yourself open. It was almost like watching a bunch of guys play on the playground. But again, disappointing loss. We'll bring it back to the Jayhawks. We're going to talk about the NCAA tournament a little bit later. Our thoughts, our predictions on how that tournament's going to go, how the Jayhawks are going to fare, how we think Iowa State, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, how all the Big 12 schools are going to fare in the NCAA tournament this year, because they have the second most, actually the most, tied for the most with the ACC for number of schools that are playing in the NCAA tournament. So it's going to be exciting, but we'll address that later. We're going to move into now Royal Spring Training. Not a whole lot to talk about this week.
No, not a whole lot new with them this week.
Team's still looking really strong. They came back from a deficit today to end up winning 6-5, but we had another tough outing by Yordano Ventura, another tough game for him.
You know,
four earned runs.
I'm not so sure if I'm really that worried about him right now. I was looking at his stats, and he's got the second most innings pitched so far this spring. He's pitched 7 innings now, and he has, I guess it's odd to say, he's lowered his ERA to just over 10. But, you know, it could be that he may just be working on some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he has 9 strikeouts, not 4 walks, so not bad right there. But, you know, when you get in the spring, some people just don't care about how many runs they give up. They'd rather just throw the same pitch over and over again and see, try and work on something.
Fine-tune those pitches, see where there's room for improvement, and maybe even try and find some other pitches in his repertoire. Urano's not a very diverse pitcher in terms of the kind of pitches he can throw, so maybe they're trying to work with him to see what else they can get out of him this season.
Yeah.
But we're inching closer and closer and closer to that opening day date, and I'm definitely excited for regular season baseball. As we move forward. Royals did today, though, make a small move. They did sign shortstop Rafael Furcal to a minor league deal. He has not played much in the last two seasons. In fact, only appearing in 9 games last year for the Marlins. But I don't expect Rafael Furcal to come in and play up in the majors for the Royals. But he does give us a little bit of a risk-free insurance for a guy who's been an All-Star 3 times. He can flash the glove. He can flash the bat. He's had some good seasons in St. Louis, in Los Angeles, in Atlanta, and then with the Marlins originally when he started out his career. So, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing it going out to a game in you know, July, August, and seeing Rafael Furcal up there maybe to take some pressure off of Escobar or some other guys in the infield. So, I don't, it's not a big splash of a signing, but it's an interesting one.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think that's kind of one of the interesting parts about the Royals spring training is for the first time in a while, they're pretty much set with what they're going with their lineup. They're only looking for a back end of the bullpen type person right now to, you know, help shore it up. So, like, they don't have a whole lot going on. It's not that exciting out there right now.
No. And, you know, we all have our prediction on who's going to make the roster. But obviously you have Gordon, Kane, and Rios manning the outfield with Dyson coming in as a spot starter occasionally when they need to give guys rest. In the infield, you'll have Moose at third. You'll have Esky at short. We'll have Infante at second, given that he comes back healthy. Yep. And then you'll have Hosmer at first with, I think, Christian Colon coming in to play that kind of utility role. So I'm excited for that. And then, of course, you'll have Salvi at catcher, and then our rotation is pretty set besides that bullpen. So I'm excited. I think we have a really good nucleus going into the season, but almost every other team in our division, their nucleus has gotten better as well. So we'll move on from the Royals since there's not much to cover this week. There was a lot of action, however, done by the Chiefs. And just an NFL free agency in general over the last week and a half. As we touched on last week, the Chiefs did end up signing Jeremy Maclin to a 5-year, $55 million contract. Former Mizzou standout. Brody, you're probably excited about him being reunited with Chase Daniel here in Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, the last time he played, put up just great numbers at Arrowhead. So hopefully that continues into this NFL season.
Yeah, absolutely. And then another big signing was Ron Parker, Chiefs safety. We re-signed him. He was drawing a lot of interest from other teams. And in fact, 6 other teams were interested in his services. Tommy, you have the numbers on his new contract, right?
Yeah, Ron Parker signed a $30 million deal. It's 5 years, $25 million base salary with $5 million in incentives. And, you know, I couldn't find his cap number right off the bat, but from what I remember reading, he has a very good contract for us in the situation we're at.
I think John Dorsey has been able to do this year is he's getting guys into contracts with low cap hits right off the bat. In fact, Jeremy Maclin's contract is only accounting for about $1.4 million on the cap this year. Ron Parker's cap number, we don't know the specifics, but it's not counting for much against the cap. And Ron Parker's salary compared to other defensive back markets in the past is lower than it usually is. I think that's just showing a kind of diluted market for the position of safety right now. I think, you know, he could have gotten a higher cap figure in a different year.
Yeah.
The Chiefs also made a trade for Ben Grubbs, guard out of New Orleans, who they then restructured his contract. Tell me you have those figures.
This one is a 4-year, $24 million deal with $8 million guaranteed.
Yeah, and Grubbs is a 2-time Pro Bowler, so he knows, we know he's a successful lineman. We know he can play in different schemes. Under Sean Payton in New Orleans, he said the scheme in terms of the difference between zone and man blocking was very similar, pretty balanced attack. He knows the West Coast offense really well, which I think is going to bode well for Andy Reid in that offense. Andy Reid's not going to be calling the plays as much as he was last season. He's going to relinquish some of that duty. But the schemes are the same, and I think it's going to be great for Grubbs to come into a system that he's somewhat familiar with. And he definitely brings more talent than we had at the guard position last year. I think it's hard to downgrade, and it was really easy to upgrade at that position. So I'm excited for that. And then another move that was made last week, we didn't really touch on it on the pod, But safety Tyvon Branch was signed to a deal, and Tommy, you have the numbers on that as well. Not too expensive for the Chiefs to have signed Branch.
No, just a one-year, $2.1 million deal with a $1,070,000 guaranteed.
Yeah, so safe bet for the Chiefs. He started the majority of the games that he's played for the Raiders at safety. Been a productive player. Kurt Coleman signed with the Panthers today, so that was a position that we needed to fill. He was our leader in interceptions last year, Kurt Coleman was. So bringing in Tyvon Branch takes some relief off that secondary. A very good secondary last year. In fact, the Chiefs ranked second in pass defense or passing yards allowed last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with the talent that we have in our front seven, especially with our pass rushers, Tom Bahali and Justin Houston. But we still have a very talented secondary, you know, kind of anchored by Sean Smith. So I'm excited to see the progression they make into this season. Tommy, what are your thoughts on the signings so far?
You know, I really like it because what I really like is the offensive line signing they've done because it kind of frees them up to do more stuff with the draft. Because I think before we made these additions to the team, it looked like the focus of the Chiefs really needed to be on the offensive line, especially after they signed Macklin. That kind of gave them a big threat at wide receiver that we didn't have to worry about getting a great wide receiver in the first round. And so now I think they can focus on getting the best available player,
yeah,
no matter who it is.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we may need to address this. Still need another lineman. I think the position I'd like to see at Gross draft is this, if there's a talented linebacker in the first couple rounds of this draft, if there's a Ben Heaney, for example, available in the first couple rounds of this draft.
Gonna ride this introduction. One,
you know, okay, he ran the third fastest 40 of all the linebackers at the combine. So you know the guy is fast. What we already knew before the combine was that the guy can tackle. He's been one of the leading tacklers in the Big 12 for the last couple seasons. Big 12 is no scrub conference. It's one of the best conferences in football. I'm just saying, Ben Heaney's shown that he's got what it takes. And I would love to see Ben Heaney in some red and white Chiefs uniforms.
Okay.
Brody, what were you most interested about? Interested in seeing the direction you're interested in seeing the Chiefs going moving into the draft?
You know, I like how it's almost up in the air of their draft pick, because before Macklin and Grubbs and all these fill-ins, it was what was their dire need at the time, and now it's best available.
Right. What was it? Offensive lineman, wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Now we filled those holes. So
now in the first round you can get whatever is the best available player, and then after that get Heaney and go after players who maybe the fans want or popular pick or something like that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm definitely excited now. I think that the AFC West is up for grabs. I don't see the Raiders unless they make some sort of big splash and are able to get some sort of free agent to take their money. I don't think they're going to do much this season. I think the Chargers will be better. I think the Broncos will be worse, and I think it'll be kind of a three-way push for that division title. But I don't think it'll be as difficult as it's been in the years past to win the division. Alex Smith is entering his 11th season in the NFL. He's 30 years old. He's getting older. Jamaal Charles isn't getting any younger. He's in his 8th season. The window's kind of closing on this Chiefs team. I'm not going to say it's closing quickly, but when you look at the talent that we rely on, when you look at the people that are focal points of our team, Tom Bahali, Jamaal Charles, Alex Smith, I know those guys are somewhat replaceable. You know, they say running backs are a dime a dozen. But the people that we've known to be faces of this franchise for the last decade are kind of starting to disappear. Derek Johnson had the Achilles tear last year. Who knows how good he comes back this year. Dwayne Bowe has been cut. There's rumors of him maybe potentially signing with the Browns. So the guys that we, you know, after that era of Trent Green, Priest Holmes, Dante Hall, the guys in that era afterwards are kind of starting to fade out. So I think the Chiefs' window is now. I think they've got about 1 to 2 year window to really make a splash, to really make a push for a Super Bowl. And I think this year we might have the talent to do it.
What I think is interesting with Jamaal Charles is on the field, when he's actually on the field in the game, it doesn't look like he's even missed a step.
No.
But he's starting to just miss more and more carries with smaller injuries. You know, he hurt his foot, ankle area at the end of summer camp last year, and that caused him to miss a couple of carries, miss a game. And so I think his body's getting older, and I could see more of that happening in the next year or two.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I always say this about Jamaal. He's not built with a big frame.
No.
He's not one of the bigger backs in the league. He's a speed runner, but he can run for power if he needs to. I almost cringe every time I see him take a big hit down the sideline because I know that there's a good chance that he might come up, you know, limping. He might come up a little wobbly. You know, there was that whole issue with the concussion last year, or maybe it was two seasons ago where there was conflicting reports. I just think that there's only so many miles left on him because when we do have him healthy and we do have him available, I wouldn't say we run him into the ground, but we run him pretty hard. So I think you probably get two or three more good years out of Jamal, and then it's time to look elsewhere at the running back position.
You know, I got to say, I think with but more receivers, that load might get a little taken down a little bit, which will hopefully extend out his career.
Yeah.
That's
and
a good
I,
point.
Yeah, and I, to that point, I think there's a lot. I think DeAnthony Thomas, second-year player.
And Dallas Davis, too, both huge running backs.
Yeah. DeAnthony Thomas not huge, but he does a lot of the same things that Jamal Charles is capable of doing. Catching a ball out of the backfield, making the hard cut, beating guys to the edge, which is what we've known Jamal Charles to be kind of his bread and butter. Niles Davis, more of a power running back. But I'm excited. Both those guys, I mean, Niles Davis with all that power is still a speed demon. I'm excited, but it's not without reservations about the future of this team. Yeah. So with that having been said, we're going to move back into college basketball because it is March Madness. Tournament games start on Thursday.
Ooh, baby.
I'm pumped up. I'm ready to try and sneak into the conference room and watch some basketball. Unfortunately, Jayhawks play on Friday at 12:47 p.m. in the afternoon. So I think I'm going to have to take my lunch break a little late on Friday. But the Big 12, like we said earlier on the pod, tied for the most teams playing in the tournament this season. Seven teams made it. Some were bubble teams. Oklahoma State was a bubble. Texas was a bubble.
Still don't understand the Texas one.
You know, I think to your point, we've talked about this a lot. It was where they started. It wasn't necessarily how they finished. And they did also lose a heartbreaking game to Iowa State. I think the committee has a pretty good idea of, you know, which team deserved to be in there. I think the most surprising one was UCLA. Not only was UCLA, you know, they got an at-large berth, but they weren't even one of the last four teams in. And they played, by UCLA's terms, pretty subpar basketball. By tournament terms, pretty subpar basketball this year. I'm not going to get too much into it because I didn't watch the Pac-12 that much this year. But UCLA, not as deserving of a tournament spot as, say, a Temple was. A Temple team who blew out Kansas by 30 early this year. But going back to the Big 12, I think this is a chance for the Big 12 to make a statement about what they're capable of as a conference. Everyone's calling it the best conference in basketball this year. I've been hesitant to call it that because you watch the ACC, the teams that they have, Virginia, Duke, Notre Dame, and then the rest of the teams that kind of round out that conference, Maryland, North Carolina, Syracuse, while they're not playing in postseason play this year, is a solid squad. But the Big 12, again, has been heralded as the best conference in basketball this year. Fact, though, about the Big 12 Conference, Kansas is the only team in the last decade that has made it back to a Final Four. The last Big 12 team besides Kansas to make it to a Final Four in the last decade was Oklahoma State. Before that, you know, in 2003, Kansas and Texas both made it. So there's a long-standing drought going on right now for the Big 12. And if they really want to convince the rest of the country that they are, in fact, the best basketball conference, this is the tournament to make a statement. I think the Jayhawks have a really good chance to go deep. They kind of got the short end of the stick with their regional matchups.
Oh, man, they get the short end on that one.
But Oklahoma actually has a pretty easy road if they win the games they're supposed to win. Iowa State has a pretty good path. And you know what? Baylor could beat some teams, could surprise some teams too. So let's just start talking about the matchups here. I'll talk about my Final Four. For my Final Four, I had to go with Kentucky, obviously. I didn't want to include them, but this Kentucky team is really, really talented. I ended up having Kentucky versus Notre Dame in that Elite Eight with Kentucky advancing. And then in the West Regional, I have Wisconsin advancing to the Final Four. I think that team is destined for a national championship this year. For my East bracket, I actually went a little bit bold on this one. I went with Northern Iowa to make it to the Final Four.
You know, I was kind of thinking about them too.
Because I don't think that Villanova is going to escape the second round. I think they're going to lose to NC State. I think NC State's a really good team. They blew out Duke at home earlier this season. So that's my pick for that region. And then for the South region, I've got Gonzaga going all the way to...
Really?
Yeah, I think Kyle Wilcher is a really talented big man. I think he does a lot of things that you see George Niang do at Iowa State, but almost more so. He's a more talented offensive player. And I think this is the Zags' year to make it to the Final Four. I don't know. I don't see Duke being able to pull off four straight wins to get there. I don't really see... The only team that I can see beating Gonzaga out for a spot that in that region would be Iowa State. I think that Iowa State-Gonzaga game is going to end up being one of the best tournament games, okay, if in fact they do play each other. This is all total speculation. Yeah. But those are my Final Four teams. I think in the Final Four, Wisconsin beats Kentucky. I just love what Bo Ryan does in with that program. And then I think I think Gonzaga beats Northern Iowa in that Final Four matchup. And then you got the Zags and the Badgers facing off with Wisconsin victorious over Gonzaga, 72-67. Really? Yeah, so those are my picks. Tommy, what about you?
Well, I went pretty standard with this on my Final Four. I have Kentucky over Wisconsin in the first matchup, and I have Duke over Virginia with a Kentucky over Duke national championship game. And it's not close in my book, but, you know, I'm really open for any change to that because that was just me trying to pick smart, although I'm not that comfortable with the Virginia one. I wish I'd had more research into this so far, which I've done two brackets so far, and I will probably do like another four or five tomorrow.
See, I think that's cheap, but keep on going.
Whatever. So anyways, I really want Wisconsin to win, but that's my kind of Big Ten homer pick. And actually... You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually could pull an upset over Kentucky if they were to face in the Final Four, or Wisconsin really could go all the way, I think, this year.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have as good a rep this year because the Big Ten was down. I think a lot of people will agree with that.
Yeah.
But they were strong the whole season.
Yeah.
They were regular season champs, conference tournament champs, although Michigan State gave them, I'm pretty sure, everything they had in the conference championship game.
Yeah, and I think Michigan State is going to have some teams on upset watch. I think
the Virginia matchup that could possibly happen.
Yeah, I think that they put the whole country on watch. Michigan State struggled over this year. They had a loss that we saw against Nebraska, which was pretty pitiful considering the kind of squad Nebraska had this year.
Well, thanks, man.
But I think upset watch. Watch out for Michigan State to beat Virginia. I think that's a popular upset pick. I do really like what the Cavaliers do from a defensive standpoint. I really like Justin Anderson, but he's been unhealthy at the end of this year. He's had some health issues. He's had some nagging injuries that have kept him out. I think that they're not really hitting their stride at the right time. And with Michigan State, the Spartans in that matchup, they're hitting their stride right now.
Yeah.
Another team that I think is really hitting their stride, although I don't have them going far, is North Carolina. I think they've shown down the stretch in the ACC that they can really play well. Marcus Paige is leading the team in points, assists, and steals. So I'm really excited to watch that team. As much as I do dislike the Tar Heels and Roy Williams, I think that they have a good chance to surprise some people in this tournament. And then another team in the ACC, I think Maryland's really, really talented. Actually, excuse me, Maryland is now in the Big Ten, which I forgot. I may have even said they were in the ACC earlier, so that is my correction. It's so hard these days with all the conference realignment to keep straight where everyone's playing. Brody, how about you? Who do you got in the Big Dance making it into the Final Four this year?
Now, I got Notre Dame having a bit of a luck of the Irish against Kentucky, beating them and KU to make the Final Four. Then Arizona upsetting Wisconsin. Duke coming through, and I think I see them playing Iowa State, but Iowa State just finally not being able to overcome some sort of deficit that they'll obviously have during the game.
Yeah.
And really, I think the East is going to be the most upset-prone bracket with Villanova, Virginia, Michigan State, Northern Iowa. I mean, all these teams have the potential to make it. I have Villanova somehow coming through the train wreck that is that bracket.
Yeah. Those are good picks, and I wish I had the balls to pick Nova going that deep because everyone and their mother is saying that an NC State is going to beat them in the second round when we don't even know if NC State's going to make it out of the first round.
Yeah.
They're playing LSU, which LSU's playing really well down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, if that's a team that if they get on fire, just watch out.
Exactly.
I mean,
that program's kind of slowly starting to get rebuilt. But, you know, I think NC State's just really good. I could see NC State being an 8 seed that makes it all the way to the Final Four. I, of course, not
enjoy watching that.
Yeah, I would love to see that. Love seeing my Billikens come back from a deficit last year to beat NC State. But make sure that. But I wasn't brave enough to call the Wolfpack the Final Four team in that region. But I'm excited. I think I don't think we should crown Kentucky as quickly as everyone has been doing, myself included in that. I think this is going to be one of the crazier tournaments there's been, just because there's so much possibility for upsets. And I think Kentucky might get unseeded by somebody we didn't expect, which could just blow this whole thing wide open.
I mean, you look at the three other number one teams, and Villanova is the only one with two losses. Wisconsin has three, and Duke has four. I mean, there's no dominant team.
Right.
Kentucky, but they're playing in the SEC.
Right. And I don't think they've really been challenged over the last two months playing in that conference. I'm excited to see what happens when they play a team, a good team, a really good team. Not to say Arkansas wasn't a good team. Arkansas is obviously in the tournament, and Bobby Portis is a really talented forward who gave Willie Cauley-Stein problems in that championship game. But I'm excited to see them finally get tested. So it's going to be a fun tournament. Let's talk about why we don't have the Jayhawks anywhere near that Final Four. I have not been impressed with this team. I love the guys on this roster. I really like Devontae Graham. I really like Kelly Ray. I really like Perry Ellis. Really, really like Hunter Mickelson and what he's done in the last few weeks for this squad. But I just don't see them being able to put it all together and make it past. Really, I don't see them. I have trouble saying they'll beat their second-round opponent because they've got to play either Indiana or Wichita State in that second round. I think Wichita State is the most underseeded team we've seen in the NCAA tournament in a while. They're slated as a 7 seed. You've got Indiana as a 10 seed, who is a pretty good team. They've shown some flashes of really talented players this year. And then, after that, if they do beat their second-round opponent, they got to turn around and play the winner of, potentially, Notre Dame-Butler. Probably going to be Notre Dame. That's a really tough matchup. And then, what's the prize you get for beating all those teams? Oh, you get the right to play Kentucky after all that. So I really think the Jayhawks have kind of gotten shafted. They're not as strong of a team as we've seen in years past, but they have played the toughest schedule of anybody in the country this year. They've got the number 3 RPI. It sucks because of the region that they play in. They're going to be in the Midwest region. Kentucky's going to be in the Midwest region. Notre Dame's going to be in the Midwest region. I would have rather had Wisconsin in that Midwest region spot. I understand why it makes sense for them to be out west, but I'm not happy with the fact that your prize for beating an underseeded 7 seed and then beating a Notre Dame team that could have been a 2 seed is you get to play Kentucky at the end of it. It's frustrating. I know that's how the tournament works, but that's why I don't see the Jayhawks making it to a Final Four this year. What are your thoughts? How far do you think they're going to go, Tommy?
You know, in my first bracket I did, I had them making it to at least face Kentucky. But, you know, honestly, I could see them losing in pretty much any round before that, too. I'm not so really in that first round, but, you know, it has happened before when we've least expected it. But I definitely think they could lose that second round matchup to either Indiana or Wichita State.
I think less likely to lose to Indiana if Indiana, in fact, wins that game. But I think that Wichita State blows them out of the water. And I think we end up playing Wichita State. We match up with them well in the front court, but in the back court, their guards are way better than ours.
Yeah, and you know, I also don't think they would make it past Notre Dame if they played Notre Dame either.
No, they're playing really good basketball down the stretch. But we won't dwell too much on the Jayhawks. We would talk about Kansas State and Missouri basketball, but unfortunately both those squads' teams have come to an unfortunate end this year. It's likely that Kansas State will have some sort of postseason tournament they participate in. They'll be in the NIT. But we're going to move into Boulevard, talking Boulevard beer. I was at the store today, and they had the Spring Bell Saison with Flower seasonal beer on the shelf, and I figured we should try one. So I've had a few sips of it so far. Tommy, why don't you read the description, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on it.
Our Spring Bell Saison marries the crisp, spicy flavor of a traditional farmhouse Saison with its citrusy hop notes to the fresh floral aromas of chamomile.
It's chamomile, you dumbass.
Whatever. Rose petals and elderflower. Late hopping with calypso and lemon drop rounds out this drinkable spring bouquet. Now, I mean, may need to pick up some Hooked on Phonics.
I think we should have had you practice that beforehand.
Possibly.
But, hey, no, that's
taken. Done. Good job.
You know what? I did not expect that description for a beer.
Yeah. That's okay. That's chamomile, just for future reference.
Thank you. I won't use that word ever again.
I've had a few sips of it. Not my favorite. I don't know. What do you think about it, Brody? I'm not a huge fan.
I mean, it's a little citrusy, has a lot of flavor, but, I mean, a good springtime beer.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it'll grow on me.
Yeah, you know, I didn't think that much of it. I can't really taste anything, but I'm starting to think it was a regrettable decision to taste this with a Hall's cough drop in my mouth. So I'm getting this with a hint of cough medicine.
Yeah, that's probably not the best way to drink it. You know, this isn't one of my personal favorites. It's not bad.
No.
I'll definitely have another one. But we're about to bid adieu to our favorite, at least my favorite seasonal beer, which is the Irish Ale, which I bought another six pack of, which we can enjoy after the show. But what's your favorite seasonal beer at Boulevard?
Mine was the Boss Tom's, but I've looked at their schedule and it's not coming out this year, so I don't know if they've discontinued it forever or if it'll be back next year, but Irish Ale is definitely up there too.
Yeah. I think for me, I would have to go with 80 Acre. It's not a seasonal. It was, but it was for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of seasonal beer, probably neck and neck with the Nutcracker would be the Irish Ale. But you know what I am hoping gets brought back this year is the Lemon Ginger Radler, which they had as a tasting room feature last summer. And those were really good to drink down at the Royals games this season. I actually had them on tap over in the Diamond Club. So maybe we can catch ourselves a couple six-packs of those. Brody, how about you?
After having tasted the Irish Ale, I'd say that is probably one of my favorites. But also like the Bully Porter.
Yeah, Bully Porter is good.
Bully Porter is good.
Yeah. And I do like that those better tasting ones, like the Bully Porter, the 80 Acre.
Nutcracker.
Just the Bully Porter and the 80 Acre are now year-round beers. So you can get them whenever you want. So I do like that. So with the beer segment, we are going to come to a close of our fourth ever Built on the Border podcast. Lots to talk about today. We couldn't get to all of it, but there'll be even more to talk about next week. Hopefully we'll have a lot to talk about after the first weekend of NCAA tournament gets underway. That'll run from Thursday through Sunday. A lot of great quality matchups. So it'll be four great days of basketball. I know I'm definitely looking forward to it. How about you, Brody?
Oh, I definitely am. And hopefully one of us gets all the first round and all the brackets, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's likely, but we'll see.
Guys, I'm really expecting $1 billion this year, so
well,
be prepared.
Buffett said it's going to be something different this year, not quite the billion, so we'll have to see what the prize money is this year. The odds are not in our favor, but who knows?
No, they're not.
No. But for Brody Johnson and for Tom Watson, this is Tom Randolph. Have a great day. Have a great afternoon. Have a great evening whenever you listen to us. Check us out on Twitter at BorderKC and check us out on our website at builtontheborder.com. And tune in next week for more great Kansas City sports coverage. Have a great week, guys. And I love you to hear, but just how long can I keep singing?